You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down, featuring in-depth discussion and interviews with stand-up comedians on the art of stand-up comedy. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down.
All right. Welcome to another exciting episode of Stand Up Sit Down. I'm your host, Nick Perdue, and I'm here joined with the hilarious, the talented, living legend, Mr. Rodney Perrin.
Living legend?
Yeah, man.
I don't know if I qualify for that yet. I'm definitely living.
I mean, because let's talk about your career. You know, you've worked with a lot of the greats.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and you've been around comedy for a while, and like people know your name, people know your face, you know, and so I feel a couple of things that you've done a legendary.
Okay.
You know, so to me, yeah, that's all that counts right now.
Take the compliment, Rodney Perrin. Just take the damn compliment. Yes. Okay. You know what? Thank you. I do receive that. And, you know, the thing about, you know, people ask me, so how does it feel to be successful? Mm. And I'm like, I'm so far away from where I'm going. Mm. That, you know, I'm just living my journey. And, you know, I've been a winner as a comedian for a long time because I've been exclusively doing comedy, you know, to sustain myself and my family for over, you know, two decades.
That's strong.
Yeah. You know, well, not quite. Well, since 98 for sure, because I was in the Navy before that. But, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, let's talk about it, because you're born in Chicago.
Chi-town, yes, sir.
And so, you know, Chicago's a rough city.
It is.
Right? Yeah, you know, so you made it out.
I did. I left Florida and them in the projects and I got out of there.
Right.
Yeah. But we left Chicago my junior year of high school and my family relocated to Monroe, Louisiana. Shouts out to Monroe, Louisiana. We had a good time there. And then, of course, you know, life happens. You start living and, you know, making babies, you know, and I reached a crossroads, one of my first crossroads when I had to decide, you know, how I was going to take care of my child. You know, I got a baby on the way. So I joined the Navy.
Yeah.
And I joined the Navy, and that took me to New Orleans, which was my first duty station. When I was stationed in New Orleans, Dr. Ken Jeong,
okay,
who is, you know, the Asian kid from the the movies.
Mr. Chow.
Right. He was in med school. Yeah. And he used to do improv with us back in the day. You know, I've known this guy for 20-some years.
Yeah.
And so it's a trip to fast forward through people's lives and go, yo, this guy's a part of my story.
Yeah.
And so New Orleans for a few years, then the Bay Area, which was really where I kind of honed my skills. And that, you know, Cat Williams, Lunell, the bad girl of comedy, a bunch of us were in that talent pool. Mm. And we got to learn kind of off the radar, you know, because the Bay is not L.A.,
yeah,
you know, so we kind of got opportunity to learn off the radar. And in 98, I decided to get out the military, packed up my family, and we came down here to L.A. and banged it out for like 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's strong. No, but let's kind of backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
And because you talked about in high school when you left, but were you considered like a class clown, or were you like the funny kid? Like, you know, what was that?
Yes and no. I mean, I was definitely a funny kid. I mean, I had a teacher in second grade that would let me tell jokes at the end of the day if I was shut up throughout the course of the day. Mm. So I was always a funny kid. But what I tell people is there were my classmates that were funnier than me. Mm. You know, this guy named Jeff, Terrence, Kevin DeFell, they were all funnier than me. But there's another thing in you that says you have to do it in front of people.
Mm.
You know, there are people, you know, somebody's watching this. You're watching this. You're funnier than me, but I'm better than you because I'll do it in front of strangers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then they pay me for it.
And they pay me.
Right.
I'm way better than you. Let me check that. I'm incredible. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And because, yeah, 'cause like, you can be funny in your group of friends.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's one thing.
Everybody's good with inside jokes. Okay. Right. Everybody's right. good. You remember that time good. But when you can walk in front of a room full of strangers and laughter is involuntary. Mm. Like people don't even, they come to a comedy club to laugh, but they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know. So it's your job to inform them that it's lifetime, dog.
Yeah.
And here we go. Yeah.
And that's half the battle too, is even just getting up there.
Yeah.
You know. And yeah. So like do you still get nervous before you go on stage?
I personally don't operate well in a nervous space. Mm-hmm. I've been extremely nervous before, but I'm usually really peaceful. You know, like I don't shadow box. Mm. I don't need the space. You know, hey man, let me give you a space before you go. I don't need that. You know, I'm really cool. I talk to people before I go up. I might have a drink. I don't like to eat before I go up because I'm a little girthy and I don't want to be too big on stage. You know, because when you eat, you be right after you eat, you be a little bloated.
Right.
So I don't like that. But but other than that, I don't have I don't get way nervous. And when I'm nervous, those are the moments as I look back at my career. Mm. Those are the moments when I didn't do well. So I personally need to be in a very peaceful place. But I know I got peers like, you know, Monique, who is a great friend of mine and a mentor. She gets nervous and she needs that nervous energy before she walks up. Yeah. I don't.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember I want to say it was Chris Rock that said something that, you know, like if, and not saying that this is you, but if you don't get nervous before a performance, then it's kind of like, it doesn't matter to you as much. You know what I mean? Like
I don't agree with everything Chris Rock says, first of all.
Okay.
You know, I'm on record on the internet, you know, going in on Chris Rock. But I'm a fan too. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yeah.
But I don't believe in making blanket statements about that, about humans.
Mm.
You can't make a blanket statement because everybody is different.
Right.
Everybody is different. My journey is not your journey.
Right.
You know, what it takes to get you going doesn't get me going, and vice versa. So you can't say, oh, if you don't get nervous, you don't believe in your journey. That's stupid.
Mm.
You know, Chris, you stupid. I said it.
That'll be the
soundbite. Rodney Perry calls Chris Rock stupid on the next Stand Up to Sit Down.
I didn't. Chris, I want a job.
Right. Hilarious. He don't know you. Yeah, he got too many friends in his life ahead of you.
So what was the catalyst that where you're like, okay, like I want to pursue stand up comedy? Like, what was the thing that made you really do it?
I always had a reference point of what stand-up comedy was because my mom and them used to have get-togethers, you know, back in the day at the house, and they would listen to the party records. They would listen to Red Fox and Richard Pryor and LaWanda Page, Bubba Bexley. They would listen. That was like their thing. So they would have friends over, and they would do that in the living room. My bedroom was right off the living room, so I would lay on the floor and crack up listening to them having this great time.
Yeah.
So I knew what stand-up comedy was, but it wasn't real for me till I saw Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
When I saw Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live, that gave me a face, a young face, a dark skinned guy.
Mm.
And he was the guy. If I could have an influence, he would be it. And, I watched him do Velvet Jones, and that was the light bulb that I said, that's what I want to be. And my cousin's like, shut up and put your shoes back on, 'cause your feet stink. And to this day, my cousin stopped and tell me, I remember you saying that, but you wasn't good though.
Yeah. Look at you now.
Yeah. Didn't you just get comped to come watch me?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Backstage pass. You got free food and everything.
Killing me.
Hilarious. Now, because you served in the Navy for 8 years.
Yes.
Right. And so, and that was your choice because, like you said, because you had a kid on the way. You said, I need to do something to provide for my kid.
Exactly. My daughter was on the way. My mother was at that point taking care of me.
Mm.
And I just couldn't see my mom taking care of me and mine.
Mm.
So I joined the Navy. It was crazy how I joined though, because I was already out of high school.
Mm.
I was working at a shoe store called Shoe Town.
Okay.
I'm on the way to work, Monroe, Louisiana, sweltering heat, summertime, and a recruiter pulled up next to me in his little white car, and he's like, hey man, you need a ride? I was like, you ain't trying to holler at me.
Right.
And he was like, no, man, I'm a recruiter, man. If you needed some help, that's what we do.
Mm.
I was like, cool. And he pitched me, you know, on a 7-minute ride to my work. And I went to the recruiting station the next day. 2 days later, I was in San Diego in boot camp.
Wow.
It was that quick for me.
Wow.
And I mean, I just knew that. And in a way, it was a great decision. Mm. And in a way, you know, it kind of took me, while it gave me the opportunity to provide for my daughter, it took me away from her too, because I was across the country.
Yeah.
So it was some difficulties. But, you know, life is not void of that.
Yeah. So when did you officially start telling jokes, and when did your stand-up comedy career begin?
Man, on the real, and I Nick, I don't tell anyone this, but really, stand-up comedy in front of human beings telling jokes, I was in high school. Mm. I was in high school, so, you know, in Monroe, so my junior, senior year, I should go to coffee shops and tell jokes. Uh-huh. Even then, while I was in college, I told jokes, you know, but it wasn't real. Mm. And when I joined the Navy, my first duty station, which was New Orleans, I went and did a gong show when I first got there.
Oh, wow.
And I got gonged. I mean, they let me have it. And they gonged me so hard, and I just couldn't leave. I was just still there. The dudes was walking past like, hey, oh, hey, go right there.
That's the one.
You still here? What are you doing still here? Did we gong him? So it was, that's first of all, to answer your question. So I'm excess of 20 years.
Okay.
But your career, in my opinion, doesn't start till you get to L.A. or New York.
Okay.
You know, and there may be some exceptions. You know, Chicago may be an exception. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, until you get out of your fishbowl and put yourself in a talent pool with the people that are doing it, you're kind of off the radar. So 1998 is when my career really started. So I'm under 20 in that respect.
Okay.
But. Walking on stage telling jokes way over 20 years.
Gotcha. So now your first time on stage in L.A.
Okay.
Where was it? What was that like? How much time did you do?
I hadn't relocated yet. I was contemplating getting out of the Navy. Mm-hmm. I want to say December 97.
Okay.
Okay. Cat Williams had already made the transition. He had already came down. He came down in like, I want to say, September, October 97.
Okay.
Like, he came down because we both Virgo, so he came down around his birthday, like September. Mm. And so he was already here smashing. Mm. He was already a legend in town.
Cat in the hat.
Right. Was already smashing stages. Right. So I was like, so, you know, we were all peers. So I was like, yo, man, I was already making that decision. One of my mentors, John Austin, I told him, I said, I'm thinking about moving. He was like, yo, Rod, let me give you some advice. He said, you have moments when you're magical, but you got to get to a point where you control that magic. Mm. And so I was kind of working on that. So long story short, so I know I'm getting out. Mm. You know, I'm kind of making that decision. My aunt lived here in L.A. So I came down to visit, to take a trip down. And some friends had talked me up on Chocolate Sundays. No, that's a lie. On Fat Tuesday.
Okay, right.
Which was Guy Tori at that time. This was, bar none, the hottest night in town at that point. Mm. Guy Tori was the host. It was crazy. It was nothing to have Snoop. I mean, that's where they discovered, everybody at that time, you know, I mean, all the athletes would be there, all the actors would be there,
Black Hollywood would really be
in the building at any given moment. So I was smashing stages in the Bay, and some friends knew the guy that was producing the show down there. They got me on the show, and I was way out of my league. We talk about nerves. I was a ball of nerves.
Right.
I was probably, you know, we talked about the way I dressed. I was not dressed great. You know, I had a suit on, but it wasn't right.
Right.
You know, and my aunt was dating a guy that owned a limo company. Mm. So we drove to the show in a limo with eight people I didn't even know.
Okay.
And I'm a military kid still.
Yeah.
So we're late.
Oh.
You know, and a military kid, that's late is like 2 seconds. Not.
Yeah.
You know, we 40 minutes late. Oh, now, wow. They know that the show is going to start an hour late. I don't know this.
Right.
So I'm completely a ball of nerves. I'm like, man, they got me late.
Right.
Me and my wife, we in the car. We going. I'm eight people. My wife's there. It's crazy, right? The energy is a fever pitch in the room. Mm. So I get Now, you know the hierarchy of a comedy show. It's, you know, especially they have like kind of a pre-show. Then they have like whoever the first guy is, which is usually an alright comedian. Mm-hmm. They're on the main show, but they aren't a household name.
Yeah.
Then the next slide is a guy that's probably better than him, maybe slightly recognizable. Then a third slide is somebody you probably know for sure, mm-hmm. you know, but he ain't really got no movies or something. And then the next guy is a star.
Yeah, the headliner.
They put me in that third slot.
Oh, wow. So you're featuring basically.
I'm featuring.
Right.
But I ain't ready for this. Dude, I am a ball of nerves. So I walk on stage, and the thing you can never have as a comedian is fear. I'm afraid. Mm. You know, I'm afraid, and it's showing all over me. It's like walking into a shark tank with a blood jacket on. And I'm on stage. I want to say about 35 seconds.
Okay.
Start getting booed. I can still see the dude. Wow. He's sitting right over there. A white dude in the sea of black people stands up and start booing me. Boo! Okay. Get off the stage.
And you didn't even start yet.
I'm 30 seconds in. I just start talking.
Okay.
But they can read the fear. Mm-hmm. So I try to attack him. That don't work. I attack him. And the boo is like wildfire.
Right.
When it get out of hand, it go from there, it bounce over there. And before long, it's 8 or 9 different people booing me at once. So I'm trying to retaliate. I'm talking about them. Nothing is working. Mm. Guy Tori finally comes back out. He's like, yo, dude, this is not your night, man. Just, you know, you can't talk about my crowd like that. So he sided with them. Everybody's against me. Everybody's against me.
Right.
So, you know, I walk off the stage. I stand behind the sheer curtain, which is still there. Mm. I'm standing behind the sheer curtain. They can't see me, but I can see through it. Guy is letting me have it. Yeah. You know, now he's my friend, but he killed me this day. He's like, yo.
As he should, though.
As he should. Yeah. As he should. He's like, yo, I hope that dude didn't fly out here because he ain't going to be able to get back on the plane with them bombs. He smashed me. That's just one of the jokes I remember. So he smashed me. And at that moment, though, it changed. Mm-hmm. Somebody in the audience go, but he didn't even get a chance. Mm-hmm. Somebody else said, yeah, he wasn't up there but like 35 seconds. So he was like, well, y'all want to see him come back? Mm-hmm. And they was like, yeah, let him come back. Let him come back. Now, what I didn't know then, I found out later on, is usually when people get booed, they gone.
Right.
Dude be in their car,
and
head
just,
on.
Just left. Yeah.
I'm still standing behind her curtain, shell shock. I'm like, what? Now, meanwhile, my wife is making her way through the room. Mm. You know, let me go. Let me. I'm going to let my husband back there. So she talking to the bouncer. I hear her. She come up. She's like, you all right? I said, I'm all right, but this ain't why I came here.
Yeah.
So she get to, she's like, well, let's go. I was like, where we going to go? You know, we roll in the limo with these people. I'm worried about facing them. So in that moment, God, you know, he opened the curtain and said, yo, you want to come back out, man? And so he bring me back on stage. We had a stage banner. He's like, man, you know, he's like, man, yeah, it was tough, man. You want to try it again? Mm. I was like, yeah. Yeah, he said, it's probably this Ben Vereen suit you got on. That's probably what they start booing. So let's try it again. I'm gonna bring you out now. Let me rewind you. He brought me out like, you ever watch the Five Heartbeats when they bring out the Five Heartbeats bad? You're like, this next band say they better than Eddie Murphy and Chris Rock all rolled into one. We shall see. You know, he brought me out like that.
Yeah.
This time he brings me out. Ladies and gentlemen, come to the stage. This brother all the way from Chicago, Illinois. Let him hear. Show some love. Give a big welcome. Rodney Perry. Ah! Now I'm like, okay, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? So I jump cut to my closer. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I gotta do my closer.
Right.
You know, I know I'm going to get a laugh on my closer. So I do my closer. I get a laugh, an okay laugh, not a great laugh. On a scale of 1 to 10, it might have been a 6.
But it was something.
It was way better than where I was.
Right.
So I just remember taking a deep breath and going, you know what? I think that's all I'm going to get out of y'all tonight. Y'all, my name is Rodney Perry. Thank you. Good night. Mm. And I walked off. And that was the moment that I made my decision, one, to move to L.A., and two, that I would be doing stand-up probably the rest of my life. Wow. Because I ran the gamut of emotion. I went from failure to success in a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that I can't conquer after that moment. Mm. Yeah.
So was that like your worst show that you've ever done, do you think? Or have you had something like someone come punch you on stage or something?
No, I don't, you know, that stuff don't happen to me. You know, when you see violence in shows, it's usually driven either by the host's energy or by the comic's energy. Mm. If you put off that type of energy, then you can affect the room.
Right.
You know, if you see, hey, so-and-so got knocked out, you know, look at his set.
Right.
His set is usually incendiary. Right. You know what I'm saying? So you said them words. I got words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
SAT.
Yeah. You know. But, so there, you affect that. So my comedy is, you know, I'm about fun, man. I think our greater purpose as comedians is to lighten a collective burden. Mm. So if you're heaping bad energy in a room, something bad can happen. Mm. You know, and I've seen some people, sometimes the audience just wants conflict.
Right.
You know, they want to be a part of the show. And don't get me wrong, I'll help you with that. If you want to be a part of the show, I'll make you a star. You know, I could do that in a heartbeat. That's why I live there. But by and large, I want people to have a good time, man. I remember one time in L.A., I lived in Inglewood. Mm. I live on the only Crip block in Inglewood, right? All right. So I lived in Inglewood, right? And I'm sitting out there. This one I had to really be conscious of watching what I said to people, because in my mind, it wasn't that big of a deal. Mm. So I'm out on the street. This dude, he come rolling. It's like dusk. It's not nighttime, but it's day is going fading.
Sun isn't all the way up. Right.
He said, "Oh, hey, homie." He said, "Oh, you that comedian?" I was like, "Okay." I'm like, my man recognized me, you know. Right. I was like, "Okay, what's up? Yeah, what's up, dog?" He said, Yeah. "You was talking about my girl titties one time." Okay. Man, you know, man, a lot of times we on the stage. We can't really even see people. We just be talking.
Right.
You saw him. You saw him. We was right there in the front. I was like, "Yeah, that's crazy, man. You know, huh? Baby." Man, that's my wife up there calling me. Let me get on that, man. Good luck. But at that moment, I realized, I'm like, dude, his hands was down.
Right.
Anything.
Don't know what could
happen. That could have been anything, dude. So yeah. I'm really conscious. You know, don't get me wrong. I don't filter myself, but I'm conscious about what I say to people and how I say it to people. Mm. You know, because, you know, it could get bad.
Yeah,
it can get bad.
But now, like, do you go after hecklers? Like, if someone's heckling you, you know, like do you kind of shut them down real quick, or do you draw it out?
I do not compromise my room. Mm-hmm. So as long as I got control of the room, you know, I kind of play. I don't get hecklers. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't. I mean, the energy in my show, and then my show, a lot of times I'm already in their space. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if I got a cordless mic, I might be standing next to you anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, because I go out in the crowd. I might, you know, you never know. Yeah. So that's kind of a part of the wild card that is Rodney Perry. Mm-hmm. So I don't get a lot of hecklers. Now, and then it's all about how you perceive what they're doing. Some people are trying their best to help you. Mm-hmm. They really believe they're doing you a favor. So I nip that in the bud real quick.
Right.
I got this.
Right.
Dog. Thank you.
Right.
I really got this. Yeah. You know, but sometimes if somebody says something funny, I now, dog, that was good. You know, I laugh at it. Yeah, but not shut the hell up. Don't do that no more. You know, women are the toughest, though, because as a man, if you smash a woman too hard, you can lose the whole crowd.
That's true.
So you got to be wary how you hit a woman, you know, and
verbally.
Yeah. No, or non-verbally. You got to, you know, if you got a lady and she, you know, she need her hands be put on, hit her in the stomach. That's another sound bite. Rodney Perry say, "Hit your lady in the stomach on the next stand up to sit down."
Hell to the nah.
I love it. Let me ask you that. How do you develop new jokes? How often do you write? And then how long does it take for a joke to be TV ready?
That's a battery of questions. Okay. First question was, how do I write?
Yeah.
How do I write? I generally, jot down ideas kind of all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if I like hear something and I'm paying attention to, you know, I'm less of a great comedy writer and more of a great reporter. You know, so I kind of pay attention to my life and the things around me and make those notes. And I generally write on stage performing. Mm-hmm. So, that's kind of my process in a nutshell. As I get older, I probably sit down and write more often. But when I'm writing, it's more for posterity's sake. Like, so I don't lose it. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm writing a joke when I'm about to stop doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I'll record it in its entirety on the sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. But while I'm in it, I don't need
like the nuts and bolts of it, because I just need a, I just need something to trigger my mind. Mm-hmm. So I write triggers, and then that sends me down the path of the joke.
Gotcha.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, when is a joke ready for TV? It could be ready the first time you say it.
Mm.
You know, I mean, for television is just another animal. You know, I have my own show on Bounce TV called Off the Chain. Mm. And what I try to create with that show is I try to create an atmosphere that's as similar to the club as possible,
mm-hmm.
which it kind of can't be that because it's just a different day.
Yeah.
You know, if you're at a comedy club, you're chilling all day. You don't do anything. You know, but when you're doing television, you got to go. You got to get your outfit. You got to show them your outfit.
Yeah.
You got to tell them what you're going to say. What's your last joke? Blah, blah. So, you know, generally, you don't have to make all of those decisions.
Mm.
So television, the art of preparing, my career has been charmed in this respect. Whenever I was getting an opportunity for television, I was always in a space of a new set.
Okay.
Naturally, I was. Yeah. I never had to go. Oh, I got to go up. I got to write 5 new minutes. I got to write 10 new minutes. I got to write 7. I was always kind of organically in a new place of a new joke. Now, if we talked off the air about how good the joke was probably better after that.
Mm-hmm.
But it got recorded at that state because that's where I was at that moment, and I'm not afraid to do that joke on television.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So that'll be before we wrap up, because like I said, you've done just a lot of TV and not even just as, you know, like stand up wise, mm-hmm. you've been on, like, you can Google Rodney Perry.
I'm Googleable.
You can, you know, hop on IMDb, way too many credits to list. But like I said, you're host of Bounce TV's Off the Chain.
Yep.
You're a co-host of the Monique show that ran, what was it, about 5-6 seasons? Or was it
2 years, 300 episodes.
Okay, so that
Two
would
years.
Equate to about, because I knew it. Yeah. There was a lot of episodes.
It's,
I was like, yeah.
Like 300. I did them all but one.
Okay.
Yeah, I did because I had a gig or something. I did them all but one, and Monique did them all. But we did 300 episodes in 2 years. It was a great opportunity. And
yeah.
This is what the Monique show gave me. It gave me Rodney Perry.
Right.
Because they were saying my name every single night.
Yeah.
Multiple times. You know, Monique saying that, Rodney Perry, get over here. Let me talk to you.
Right.
So, and I took criticism. You know, I'd be like, you don't say nothing. You need to say more. How come you don't?
Mm.
The best advice I give anybody, stay in your lane.
Because
you'll get your chance. Your chance to lead will come.
Mm.
And I got to learn how to produce. I got to learn how to create in that space. And then learn what dealing with a network is like and stuff like that. That's invaluable experience.
The only thing I don't like about that is how they put you on a stool. Like, can they give them, you know, like a comfortable chair? Because like, you just looked uncomfortable on that stool. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
When I was watching, like, he looked a little uncomfortable.
You know, it wasn't. It had, you know, they switched my chair a few times. You know, I'm like, can we get another chair? You know,
right,
so
right.
They switched my chair a few times. But, you know, Andy Richter is, you know, he's sitting on the couch, but they don't show him. He's
right.
sitting there.
Right, right.
It don't matter. He's there. It doesn't matter what he's sitting on. It's a two shot.
But he's there, right.
It's
exactly.
A two shot. It's a three shot. So, you know, that's what that is.
Yeah.
You know, so once you understand what that is, but that prepared me to have, like, I use this analogy. When I was in the Navy, there was a friend of mine, name was John. John would say, hey, Rodney, come down here, help me wash my car, man.
Mm.
I'm like, man, what I look like washing your damn car? He's like, dude, don't look at it like you washing my car. Look like you preparing to wash your own car.
Mm.
And that was probably some bullshit. But.
Was it a nice car, though?
It was just okay.
Mm.
But the idea was powerful because when I'm on Bill Bellamy's Who's Got Jokes, when I'm on the Monique show, I was helping them wash their car.
Right.
And that prepared me to be able to wash my own car.
Right.
I'm on Bounce TV, baby. And I'm a producer. What?
See?
What?
And so, because it airs every...
We are on Tuesdays, 9 p.m., and they usually run a replay that same night, and then we come again on Thursday. So, Bounce TV, it's a broadcast network, only 2 years in existence.
Yep.
They're doing original programming. Go to BounceTV.com for all that information, man. They're somewhere where you are.
And I know because I caught it online, so I know that you can watch it online.
Yeah. Last season is up, and they'll probably be putting up this season real soon.
Perfect. And then so where can people see you live? Where are you going to be next?
I'll be here in town. I'm in town and here in LA for another couple of days. So, you know, I always beat up the stages when I come. So I'm at Inside Jokes, coming up real soon. But go to my website, RodneyPerry.com. All things Rodney Perry. That's kind of the catch all. At Rodney Perry on Twitter, Rodney Perry Live on Instagram. And, holler at me. I'm easy to find, man.
Yeah. Perfect, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for stopping through.
Nick, you're good, dude.
You're good.
You asked really good questions.
Thank you, sir.
Very impressed. Thank you. Well done.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming.
Good stuff.
Thank you guys for watching. Again, you can find me all over the internet at the Nick Perdue. Until next time, we'll see you again.
Woo!
From producers Maria Menounos, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire BHL crew, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I'm your BHL announcer, Scipio. Instagram me at Planet Scipio. Thank you for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.